be completely honest, I'm not really sure where I heard or saw the next Dvar Torah. What's the ikar is that it's not my own. Certainly Ruba Deruba is not my own. I don't want to take credit for somebody else's Torah. I'm not really sure who pointed it out to me or where I saw it all put together in the following way. But certainly somebody else deserves the credit. I feel bad. Normally try to bring Geula Liolam by being Omer Davar B'Shem Amro. But I think this idea is worthy of being said, even if it can't be said B'Shem Amro. Simply because of, I don't even remember who B'Shem Amro is. You think about the Chedem Araglim, it's clearly the most important event, negative event, that happened to us in the Midbar. Oh, I shouldn't even say that. Chedem Egel is a pretty negative event as well. But let's put it this way. Perhaps had the greatest impact on the lives of the Jewish people in the Midbar, more so than any of the other events. It's certainly understandable that after speaking Lashon Hara about the land, this generation was going to be punished by not being permitted to enter the land. And the story makes a lot of sense. The punishment fits the crime very beautifully. But the true measure of greatness and the true measure of anybody accomplishing anything in this world is after we're knocked down, after we make a major error, we make a major mistake, what's the follow-up? What happens right after that? How do we get up and dust ourselves off? So it's interesting. After telling us about the story of the Meraglim, the Torah tells us about three mitzvos before continuing in the narrative. It tells us about Afrash Eschala, Nisuch HaMayim VaYayin Al Gabe HaMizbeach, and Tzitzis. Now obviously we have to understand the connection between these three mitzvos and the sin of the Meraglim. Second question. The Zohar tells us that the motivating factor for the Rashi Ha'edah of the Jewish people to malign the land of Israel was the fear that upon entering Eretz Yisrael, they'd be replaced with new leadership. Now that fear requires a lot of clarification. One would think that the opposite should be true. If these leaders successfully bring their people into the Promised Land, they can certainly expect the support of the people. Why would they automatically assume that they're going to be replaced as soon as they get into Eretz Yisrael? What do you mean? These are the heroes. These are people that, this is the manager who led the Red Sox to the World Series after 86 years. These are the heroes. These are people who can't do wrong from here on in. They led us through after such a terrible shibud. They brought us to the Promised Land. Why would they be afraid that they're going to be fired as soon as they get there? Rav Chaim Yaakov Goldberg, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the Rashiva Keren Biavn, explained that the Meraglim feared the new type of existence that they would live in Eretz Yisrael. The desert was a spiritual oasis. All their needs were taken care of. Their bread was heavenly bread. Their water was the water of miracles. Their protection came directly from the Anan of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Jewish people with no worldly distractions were free to dedicate themselves completely to Torah and to Avodas Hashem. Is there a greater existence? Can there be anything more geschmack than that? Literally living B'tzel Kel in the shadow of the Ribono Shalom. The Meraglim feared that the transition to a setting where Jews would be farmers, extracting their bread from the earth, their water from man-made wells, their protection from clothing and homes woven and built by man, that was going to be too difficult. Such an existence would demand new leadership. They felt ill-equipped to lead the Bnei Yisrael in that kind of environment. A leadership that understood this way of life and was able to adapt to it would be necessary. The Meraglim did not feel equipped to adapt. What the Meraglim failed to understand, though, was that the mission of the Jew was always to participate in the physical world and raise each activity from the mundane to the divine by engaging in them l'shem shemayim. Eretz Yisrael doesn't only involve agriculture, it involves agricultural mitzvos. Life in Eretz Yisrael doesn't remove us from spirituality. It allows us to experience spirituality in a whole new way, by connecting to the physical. An unbelievable notion, an unbelievable idea. The Sfasemek explains that this point of elevating the mundane through the mitzvos was taught to Klal Yisrael through the three mitzvos that they were taught immediately after the episode of the Meraglim. The fear was that the spiritual existence, as indicated by spiritual bread, water, and shelter, would turn into a physical, mundane existence of normal bread, water, and shelter, and each of these three mitzvos relates to another element of basic sustenance that, while achieved in a conventional way, is elevated through the performance of mitzvos. Challah is the bread that people would toil to make. It would be used to take of a truma la Hashem. We would raise a portion up for the Ribbono Shel Olam. And it was given to those who dedicated their lives to spiritual pursuits, to the Kohanim. Nisuch HaYayin, the drink, which is sanctified by the Nisachim of wine and water on the Mizbeach, where mankind expresses recognition of the fact that all blessings stem from the Ribbono Shel Olam. And Tzitzis, the clothing, the most basic level of protection a human being can have, is sanctified with the tzitzis on the corners. Again, a reminder that wherever we look on this large beget of life, there's always a mitzvah at every corner. So Sfas HaNasi says, don't you see? The exact thing that the Meraglim feared, their exact mistake, was that where we're going to have physical bread, and physical water, and physical protection, we're going to lose any sense of spirituality. The Ribbono Shel Olam immediately addresses the problem, addresses the concern. He says, no, the bread is going to be achieved by physical means, it's going to be gotten by physical means, but you're going to be mekadesh it. You're going to have hafreshes challah. Yes, the mashke, the drinks, the wine, and the water is going to be accomplished and gotten by physical means, by hard work and toil, and by the sweat of your brow, but you're going to be mekadesh it. There's going to be a nisuch hayayin and a mayim al gabi hamizbeach. Our physical protection is going to involve ishtadlus. We're going to have to build ourselves homes and protection, and we're going to have to make ourselves clothing. Yes, that's all true, but we're going to be mekadesh it. We're going to put tzitzis on that clothing. And perhaps we can add that each of these mitzvahs teaches us a different method of sanctifying the profane and the goal in doing so. There are occasions that call for each method, and we have to figure out which of these methods apply at different times. Let me explain. Challah involves taking the profane and raising it to Kedusha. Truma means literally laharim, to raise up. To be mekadesh lechem min hashamayim. God doesn't need people. If it was lechem min hashamayim, God wouldn't need us to help him be mekadesh. The angels are probably more capable than we are in that realm. Hashamayim shamayim lahashem va'aretz nasan levnei adam. We have to take lechem min haaretz. We have to take the lechem from our domain and raise that up as a truma l'Hashem. The nesachim represent the opposite idea, taking that which is holy and applying it in our everyday lives, not taking that which is profane and sanctifying it, but taking that which is holy, not desanctifying it, but applying the kedusha down to our everyday lives. It goes down ad l'tahom. And it's quite a feat to extend that which is kadosh and allow it to affect that which is chol. And once we're trained in both methods of fusing kedusha and chulin, we'll be ready to notice the mitzvos that hang at every corner of our lives, and we'll be able to appreciate that anything we may do can be used toward the service of the Ribbono Shel Olam, as symbolized by the tzitzis that surround us in all dalet kanfos. In our lives, we all make a similar transition to the one that the Dor HaMidbar had to face. Not all of us. Those of us that were zoche to a yeshiva education. Those of us that were zoche to learn in Dalit Kolsei Beis HaMedrash. We know what it means to have had the experience of learning in a safe and spiritually uplifting environment of a yeshiva. Our needs taken care of. Our focus purely on matters of the neshama. Many of us probably recall in our days in yeshiva when our biggest problem, you know, the biggest thought in our mind was how to forempt the Rashi from Taisus Kasha, was how to deal with the Reb Chaim, how to understand the Machlokas Ketzos and Asivas. And we probably recall, I certainly recall, having dreams at night about a Reb Chaim, a Ketzos and Asivas. We have dreams. That's what was on our mind. It was an unbelievable experience of Kedusha. That's the Kedusha of a yeshiva. That's what we experienced. And knowing that we would one day have to make the transition into the real world, a lot of us had big plans relating to how we're not going to be like those other balabatim who allowed their Torah to fall by the wayside. We're going to be different. We'll allow a physical existence. We would never allow a physical existence to remain physical. We would always make sure it's influenced by Kedusha. We would learn through Choshen Mishpat before going into business, like the Nesiva suggests in his Tzava'a, so we can make sure that we are very careful in every kutzo shel yud of the halacha when we are engaged in Dinei Mamonos. But for many of us, we haven't been as successful as we've envisioned. Even, I'll tell you a secret, even people in Klei Kodesh, not necessarily as successful as we envisioned in dealing with this balance, in being Mekadesh every corner of our lives. And for many of us, we're on track to becoming like all of those people that when we were younger in yeshiva, and I guess idealistic, we would say that we would never be like them, and now we're on track to be just like that. And a look at the Meraglim reveals to us what went wrong with our transition. Why didn't Yoshua share the same fears of the transition into Eretz Yisrael that the others did? Why didn't Yoshua make the mistake of the Meraglim? And the answer could be found in what Chazal tell us. Yoshua hayenar, lo yomosh mitocha oel. After everybody else went home, Yoshua remained with Moshe Rabbeinu and developed a lifelong kasher with him. He knew that he wasn't on his own. Moshe would guide him, provide him with the necessary chizik to be successful in his mission. Many of us had Rebbeim in yeshiva. How many of us made an effort to maintain that kasher after yeshiva? How many of us make sure we have a Rebbe in our lives, whoever it might be? Every year at graduation, the menahal of our yeshiva, Rav Yisrael Kamenetsky, Mori Virabi, always tells the boys one bit of parting advice. Graduation is coming up this week, so I'm about to hear it again. He always tells them, make sure you have a Rebbe in life. Wherever you go, make sure you have someone to guide you spiritually. No matter who we are and how much inner fortitude we may have, no Jew is meant to tackle the world on his own. Rav Salvechik had Rav Chaim Heller. When Rav Aaron Lichtenstein went to Eretz Yisrael and he realized he'd be away from his Rebbe, from his father-in-law, from the Rav, he went and he found himself a new Rebbe, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Rav Shlomo Zalman became his Rebbe. We all need somebody who can tell us that we should be attending more shiurim, that we shouldn't be giving up on the Daf Yomi so quickly, that we should engage in more spiritual pursuits. We should be thinking spiritual matters. We should be thinking in Kedusha. We have to have somebody who knows our capabilities and can guide us in this most difficult transformation, which is a lifelong transformation. Because we recharge our batteries every once in a while, but still we feel like we're pulled sometimes. And we need someone to show us how to apply this Kedusha and bring it down into the Chulin, and allow all of the chol to be touched by the Kedusha. And this is why there are two Mishnais in the first parak of Avos that essentially tell us the same exact phrase, Asei Lecha Rav. Maral explains, each Mishnah refers to a different aspect of the Rebbe. The first refers to his teachings, educationally, what he can teach you. He can teach you Aleph Beis, he can teach you Mishnais, he can teach you Gemara, he can teach you Lamdas, he can teach you Halacha. That's one Asei Lecha Rav. But the latter refers to his guidance through the haze of life. It refers to the Rebbe who is able to give us clarity when we have doubts. I don't know where I would be without my Rebbeim. I'm sure many of us have the same question. Where would we be without our Rebbeim? Have we taken full advantage of them? Have we sought their guidance when we really needed it? Have we tried to do this all on our own? I'm not talking about being brainwashed. I'm not talking about listening to every single word that somebody says and making sure that you don't make any of your own decisions in life. No, a good Rebbe will make sure you're making your own decisions in life. But it'll guide you in the context through which you should think things through. You know, my Rebbeim, when I've spoken to them about issues, have pretty much just clarified the issues for me. Once they clarify what the issues are, usually I'm able to make a reasonable decision on my own. And that's the message of the Meraglim. The Meraglim were terrified that they weren't going to be able to make this transition. They couldn't relate to a transition from an environment of Kedusha to an environment of Chol. And the reason they couldn't relate to it is because they didn't have a Rebbe to guide them. They weren't a Talmud like Yoshua was a Talmud. They did the Asei Lecha Rav number one, where they were educated, but the Asei Lecha Rav number two, where they sought the guidance of a Rebbe, of a Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest Rebbe in the history of humankind, that they didn't fulfill. And Yoshua fulfilled it. And that's why we saw who became the true leader of Klal Yisrael in the next generation, and who in fact brought us into the Promised Land.